elections are the cornerstone of democracy, giving citizens a voice in their government in the most fundamental way. But are elections today truly free and fair? Or have they evolved into a game of money politics as parties grow increasingly divisive? I'm Christy I, and you're watching The Cost of Everything, where today we're going to be taking a look at elections. How much does it cost for countries to host elections? What is all the money spent on, and are they truly free and fair? Political spending in the U.S. 2020 election totaled $14.4 billion, which is more than double the total cost of the previous record-breaking 2016 election cycle. So where does all that money go? Well, over half of it goes to media and advertising on television, radio, news outlets, web ads, and social media. About 15% of that goes towards fundraising efforts to bring in more donors and sponsors. 20% then goes towards administrative costs and salaries for the campaign managers and consultants. And the last 12% goes towards the campaign expenses, such as consulting, events, surveys. So in 2020, there was a total of $8.5 billion spent on over 9.3 million TV ads, radio, and digital media. Now, one can argue that this chunk of money was completely wasted, as the U.S. easily outspends every other country in the world, but without producing an election that is in any way more fair or free. A lot of spending, but very little substance, as the exceptional amount of time and money does not produce an engaging democratic process. The U.S. ranks near the bottom in terms of voter participation when compared with other developed nations. Now, in comparison, India's last general election cost $7 billion, with most of the budget going towards social media ads and travel. Now, when the relative population of both countries are taken into account, 300 million in the US versus 1.3 billion in India, the per capita spending is way out of line with that of the world's largest democracy. Now, in Germany, campaigns only last 6 weeks. So while there is no limit on campaign contributions, there simply isn't enough time to run up a huge bill. Parties are given airtime on two public television networks and usually makes just one 90-second ad to convey their message during those slots. Meanwhile, in the UK, election spending is strictly limited, and each party cannot spend more than £30 million in the year before the election. Now, in the U.S., a big portion of this outrageous budget comes from dark money, which is contributions from donors that remain hidden from the public. The amount of dark money the U.S. spends in an off year was almost three times as much as the £30 million Great Britain spends. And for more, let's bring in Professor Chara Torres-Spellacy, author and law professor at Stetson Law. So first off, how do U.S. election campaigns spend their money?
So there are two ways of thinking about the cost of elections. One is the cost to administer elections, and that's estimated to be about $2 billion for a general election in the United States. Cost of the federal election was over $14 billion.
And why are elections so expensive and inefficient? And which countries have a better model?
The United States has expensive election administration because we have so many different entities that are administering elections. So we have a level of federal oversight, which is actually quite small. Most of election administration is administered at a hyper-local level. So one way to think of the American election is that it's not just one election. It's really 10,000 different elections running simultaneously.
Now, it looks like there's been a decline in voter turnout in the U.S. What caused this, and why are some voter turnouts so much higher in other countries like Singapore with 95% turnout?
So voter turnout was actually up in 2020. That was a very unique election. One of the things that raised turnout in the 2020 election. States relaxed voting rules to accommodate voters during the pandemic. But what states have done in the last 2 years is many of the same states that relaxed their rules in 2020 have tightened them again.
Now, we saw an unprecedented level of political ad spending in 2020. Do you think this was an effective use of funds, and does it set a precedent for future campaigns going forward?
So in the area of campaign finance, nearly every election has been more expensive than the previous presidential election. And we definitely saw that pattern in 2020, which was the most expensive federal election the United States has ever seen. So the trend of American elections costing more and more in terms of campaign finance is a trend that's continuing. It's hard to know how you measure efficiency in this context. You could look at the amount of money that is spent per vote. And the candidates who end up spending the most per voter are the vanity candidates. So for example, when Kanye West ran for president in 2020, he had one of the highest costs per voter because very few people ended up voting for him, even though he and his team had spent millions of dollars. But it's difficult to think of elections in terms of that type of efficiency because there are other values at stake, including democratic values. So one of the reasons that we have such high spending in US elections is our Supreme Court thinks of money equaling speech. And under our First Amendment, the Supreme Court has been unwilling to regulate in a very serious way the expenditures that are made in our elections.
And not all elections are fair. There are many cases of electoral fraud, voter suppression, unbalanced campaign finance rules, and imbalanced access to media. In what country or countries do we see the most of that?
So one of the, I think, really pernicious myths that persists about American elections, which was perpetuated by ex-President Trump while he was president, is that there's rampant voter fraud. This is a myth. And unfortunately, millions of his followers believe this myth. And so, for example, after the 2020 election, there were over 60 lawsuits that challenged votes in swing states in an attempt to overturn the 2020 election. And the accusation was often that there was voter fraud. But in these court cases, they could not prove any voter fraud. And voter fraud, in reality, is a really rare occurrence. Every now and then, you will get someone who's not qualified to vote voting. And occasionally, you get some knucklehead somewhere who tries to vote twice. The people who try to vote twice and people who vote when they are not qualified usually get caught after the fact and prosecuted. But those prosecutions are more rare than being struck by lightning. So it's not a real problem in the United States, but the rhetoric around it would lead many Americans to believe it is.
And what exactly constitutes as voter fraud?
Well, so for example, in my state in Florida, we have very strict rules on ex-felons getting their voting rights back. And so if you are an ex-felon and you haven't done all of the steps to get your voting rights restored and you vote, then that's an illegal vote. And so that is one of the examples of what could be prosecuted after the fact if someone votes when they're not allowed to vote. And then again, there have been examples here in Florida. There's this place called The Villages. It's very conservative. And a number of individuals in The Villages were prosecuted for voting twice. And that is the type of voter fraud we get. But that was essentially three individuals in the villages getting caught doing that out of millions of votes in the state of Florida.
Thank you so much, Professor Chara Torres-Spellacy, for your time today. Now, what about African elections? How much does it cost to run an election in some of the African nations? And is the cost higher? We'll have more after the break.
Is it time to talk? It would seem so. The West's rhetoric is at odds with hard realities on the ground in Ukraine. The Chinese have presented a proposal, and it is believed the UK, France, and Germany are cobbling together a plan for Zelensky. But are they willing to talk to Russia?
Welcome back. African elections are also remarkably expensive to run, and yet they are very contested. Between 2000 and 2018, it is estimated that Africa spent approximately $44 billion on holding elections. Countries in Africa spend on average $4.50 per capita on their elections, compared to the world average of $2.10 per person. Now, while the U.S.'s cost is high due to rampant spending on ads and no limits from campaign donors, Africa's elections are expensive for a very different reason: lack of trust. The cost of running elections in Africa has been pushed up by low levels of trust in the electoral process. To manage mistrust, some have turned to foreign companies to print out ballots with expensive security features like those used on banknotes. Others have procured costly electronic voting machines to minimize fraud, setting the taxpayer back. But unfortunately, the votes were still contested. Kenya's 2022 election, for instance, cost the state $370 million to run, yet was still contested at the Supreme Court, with the losing candidate alleging criminality. The country's previous election in 2017 cost $500 million and saw the presidential results nullified due to, quote, serious irregularities. So while countries in Africa started opening up to democracy three decades ago, the region is still characterized by weak institutions, manipulation of electoral law, and serious limitations of civil and political rights. All of that contributes to low level of trust in a fair and free election. If voters and candidates do not believe in the institutions, processes, and structures behind an election, then there is little that a new high-tech innovative voting machines that can do to help. And for more, let's bring in Reginald Strasser King, journalist and senior producer at Sierra Leone Broadcasting Corporation. So, Reginald, what is the cost of elections in other countries, and how does that compare with that of the U.S.?
Well, you see, in our system, what we do is that we have a general elections, which includes the presidential elections, the parliamentary elections, the local council elections. And so it's a combined elections for all of these representatives. And in Sierra Leone, our last general elections, presidential and general elections, cost us $28 million, an average of $28 million. And the government's contribution was about $11 million, and the rest came from the international community here. And you see, that kind of money, I don't know whether you guys, because you're separate in America, as compared to us in Sierra Leone, we have a cluster of these elections rather than having a single presidential election at one time.
Now, how are elections run in other countries? Do people get days off? And what kind of laws are there surrounding election days?
Let me preface my answer to that question that our election system is governed by the, first of all, the constitution, and then the various electoral laws. And this boils down to the Electoral Commission of Sierra Leone, which superintends or supervises the election, which oversees the elections. Now, coming to representation, we have political parties here, over 10 of them, that submit their candidates for the elections, for the presidential and the parliamentary, as well as the local councils. And we do not believe that election representatives or political representatives should come from religious groups or from tribal. No, we don't believe in that, but we believe in having representations based on membership to a party or somebody being independent. Well, you have historically in the US, you have the Republicans and the Democrats. And until Sarah Palin came up the last time, it's a Tea Party, which we don't know what happened to it. But here in Sierra Leone, we have more than 10 political parties, but the two strongest are the All People's Congress, that's the APC, and the SLPP party, which is the Silent People's Party. These are the two strongest parties here. Of course, in recent times, they've been challenged by other parties like the PMDC, like the UDM, and all the rest of it. But like the biblical saying goes, those parties fell on stony grounds and seems to be suffering from resurrection.
And now there's this growing group calling to prohibit machine voting and machine counting of ballots in future elections, and instead revert back to hand counting. What do you make of these concerns, and are they valid?
Well, like I said earlier on, the Elections Commission of Sierra Leone is supervising, has the responsibility of supervising the elections. And we have elections observers from at local level, as well as from the international community as well. Remember I told you that we have our donor partners like the European Union, the British government, the American government, you know, they all send electoral observers here. United Nations, they send electoral observers here to monitor the elections. But again, whether these elections are monitored till the end, well, we know that up to the last counting and the declaration of the results, thereafter, that's where the responsibility finishes. But then sometimes you have post-election disagreement, yeah? And once those election results are certified, the observers pack their bags and leave. The aggrieved party, if it's so inclined, will decide to take the matter to the court for a legal settlement, for a legal ruling. If they cannot, because of one reason or the other, that ends the matter. Back in those days, we know that it invariably ends in violence. But today, I guess that that mindset has been changed.
And elections have gotten more and more polarized in recent years. It was very evident in the recent U.S. elections and is also now the Brazilian election. Why has it gotten so polarized and contentious?
Well, I guess on focus, I don't know whether we will have this time around a one-term president. Because having watched the American scene, the Donald Trump ending, and Bolsonaro's ending on Sunday, and then looking at the January 6th violence in at the state capital, and what I was seeing in Brazil, where Bolsonaro's supporters were behaving just the same way as the Republican supporters in January 6th, I don't think we're going to go to that level.
Thank you so much, Reginald Strasser King, journalist and senior producer at Sierra Leone Broadcasting Corporation, for coming on today. It's easy to see who wins in an expensive election cycle: the party with the bigger check. As big money and super PACs dominate the U.S. political campaigns, it starts to drown out the voices of ordinary Americans. In a democracy, politicians are expected to represent each person equally, regardless of their financial status. The principle of one person, one vote means that no matter who we are, regardless of education, housing, or financial status, that they will be heard. However, money in politics complicates this idealistic system. When organizations donate a large contribution to the campaigns, that politician is more inclined to be responsive to that organization's needs. Now, this puts the voices of everyday citizens at a disadvantage. The same is true in Africa, where money talks, but citizens are aware of this unfair disadvantage, and they do not trust the voting system. Increasingly, economic and political inequalities are interlaced, leaving many Americans poor and voiceless. The U.S. now has some of the lowest rates of upward mobility in any developed country in the world. So while the U.S. is a self-appointed champion of democracy, maybe it is time for it to learn from other countries on how to run a truly free and fair election. Solutions would include tighter limits on contributions candidates can directly receive, greater transparency of who pays for political ads, and disclosing all donors and stopping the flow of dark money. I'm Christy Eye. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you right back here next time on The Cost of Everything.